Raiders rush four. Mahomes retreats. Steps up into the pocket. He throws it late for the end zone. Kelce wide open. Touchdown! Kansas City! Why not? Mahomes to Kelce again to take the lead on a 22-yard touchdown pass.
That's Travis Kelce grabbing the ball from the sky to beat the Raiders and showing Las Vegas that their infamous team bus victory lap in Kansas City in October was a bit premature. Week 11 of this NFL season brought drama with the loss of Cincinnati's Joe Burrow to the rise of Taysom Hill in New Orleans. And so Dan Graziano joins us from Indianapolis, site of one of Sunday's two overtime thrillers, to make sense of everything we learned. I'm Pablo Torre. It's Monday, November 23rd. This is ESPN Daily. Dan Graziano, it is 11:58 p.m. Eastern, so thank you very much, man, for staying up late.
I don't know how you could, after that game, I don't know how you can go right to sleep. That was exciting.
Dan Graziano is an ESPN NFL insider, and he will get to sleep soon, we promise.
I get fired up for a game like that.
Yeah, me too. I mean, let's get into this right off the top here. I mean, the Chiefs just beat the Raiders 35-31. They beat the only team who has beaten Kansas City this season, Dan, back in week five, about a million years ago. So what were you watching for in this rematch tonight?
Well, to see if they could do it again, right? I mean, that sounds simple, but like, I didn't think their victory over Kansas City was a fluke because it seemed like they had kind of a formula that they went out and they stuck to. They didn't win tonight, but they certainly could have. And I think that's significant because they know that's the team that is in their way. They're in their division, and obviously they're on top of the conference and the league as the Super Bowl champions. So You see the Raiders, they draft a running back in the first round last year that can help them control the clock and keep Mahomes on the sideline like they did in the first game they played him. They draft the speedy wide receiver this year in the first round that can stress their cornerbacks. I mean, like they're thinking about the Chiefs all the time, and they're certainly not on that level at this point, as the records indicate, but they've constructed a team that can play in a way that threatens the Chiefs and might be able to beat them. So they're not as different as you might be inclined to think.
Yeah, and I have to admit, like, the difference between Pat Mahomes and Derek Carr felt smaller than I ever realized it would tonight.
Yeah.
What did you see from these two quarterbacks?
It's a guy that's in total command of the offense, which has not always been him. And certainly since Gruden's been there, we've seen a lot more ups and downs where he looked like he was, a little bit lost or a little bit uncertain. But this is year three with Gruden. And, when Gruden got there, he talked about pumping Carr up and making sure that Carr believed he was the guy so that when the thing came together around him, he would be the guy that was in total control of things. And it seems to be coming to fruition. And look, he's got people to throw to. I mean, Nelson Agholor, like out of nowhere, is having, a career renaissance in Las Vegas. He's got two very good running backs, got a great offensive line. And I think, he's playing with a lot of confidence, as you would expect him to, given all those things. Now, I think he's taken a big jump this year in terms of where he ranks in terms of the quarterbacks we feel confident about when we watch them.
It did feel like Gruden kind of knew, like, it's Sunday Night Football. Let's give the people something that they'll enjoy. What did you most enjoy from hearing those play calls?
Well, I would love to know what the Purple Walrus was. And I mean, I think there were some Vegas ones, like he dropped the Sammy Davis in there at one point. And then it sounded like they've been paying very close attention to the NBA offseason because there were a number of, James Harden and those kinds of. Who among NFL coaches knows how to produce primetime football better than John Gruden, right? I mean, he did it for a decade or so for us in terms of, operating in that sphere. So maybe, maybe he feels like a showman, or maybe they're just having a lot of fun in their offensive meetings, and that's what they sound like all the time, and we're just not all watching them every week. But yeah, it was fun.
And so as showmanship goes, that last drive, man, like Travis Kelce had some great moments in this game, but that catch at the end, Mahomes calling him the best tight end in the league post game. What did you see from Travis Kelce tonight?
Yeah, domination. I mean, like, this is you talk about reliability. I mean, the quarterback knows he's going to be where he's supposed to be. He knows he's almost certainly going to be open. He knows he's going to catch the ball. Like, it's total, complete confidence in a guy in a key spot, third down, a gotta have it throw to the end zone in the final minute. I mean, he is the best tight end in the league. I don't think it's even close, especially when, you know, George Kittle is on the shelf right now. And the second best tight end in the league is probably the guy that was on the other sideline tonight. So there's no doubt that he and Mahomes are in sync in a way that very few combinations like that are.
So the pretext for this game gave us some drama before a snap was even played. I mean, it was the fact that the Raiders team bus, now famously, had apparently done a victory lap around Arrowhead Stadium in Kansas City after they won back in October. And is this enormous historical NFL rivalry, is it officially back on to you? Is all this drama real?
Yes. And the reason is that the Raiders aren't scared of them. And look, the Raiders still going to have to get themselves into the playoffs. As of now, they are, if the season ended today. But if they get themselves into the playoffs, and they look eminently capable of doing that, I think their schedule, their remaining schedule, is one of the easiest out there, according to our metrics. If they get themselves into the playoffs, I think they're the scariest team if you're the Chiefs. They beat you once. They came within, you know, a minute of beating you a second time. They believe they can do it. They believe they should do it. They have the ability to attack you in a variety of ways that expose the issues that you do have with your defense. We've seen this Steve Spagnuolo defense elevate in the biggest of stages, in the Super Bowl, in the fourth quarter of the Super Bowl. So I think, you know, look, Steelers are undefeated. Right now the Chiefs would have to go there. The Steelers could have a bye. They're scary. But I think if you're the Chiefs, the Raiders are the team you don't want to see come January right now.
So the thing I think NFL fans really didn't want to see today happened in this Bengals game, because the scariest headline of the day, man, it's Joe Burrow, the number one overall pick in 2020, suffering this catastrophic injury.
Bad news for Cincinnati fans. Oh, Joe Burrow was bent sideways. It looked like his left leg. Oh, no. The number one pick in the draft looks to be seriously hurt, grabbing at his left.
That knocks him out of the rest of the season in the middle of a really promising year that everybody seemed to be impressed by. So what happened here?
There will be things written about, did they protect him well enough? Did they ask too much of him? He's thrown the most passes of anybody in the league, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Look, you could tear your ACL on any play. So I don't think we need to necessarily go there. It's sad because he was fun, right? And like, I mean, he'll be back. He said he'll be back next year, and I'm sure he will. It's just part of the game. I mean, look, we haven't watched Saquon Barkley play all year. Dak Prescott was maybe going to set records. Yeah, Burrow going down was a tough blow this week, and we will miss watching him the rest of the year.
So the other rookie quarterback who had a rough Sunday was Tua Tagovailoa, and he gets pulled for Ryan Fitzpatrick in the fourth quarter of the Dolphins' eventual loss to the Broncos. There was a lot of speculation about, okay, this is injury then. But it turns out after the game that Brian Flores, the coach of the Dolphins, says, no, it wasn't injury. It was simply because that's who he thought would be the best quarterback for the remainder of the game. And after the game, Flores and Fitzpatrick both indicated that Tua would, in fact, be the starter next week and for the foreseeable future. So, Dan, get into the mind of Flores here. What is going on? Mm-hmm.
I think what we've seen from Brian Flores in his short time in Miami is that this is a coach that knows his team, and this is a coach whose team is buying in. And so you can make a move like this when you have those two tent poles set up. Part of managing a young player is knowing when it's a little too much for him, so we back him off. We know we have Ryan Fitzpatrick, who will also stand by him and be a key part of his support system. Even if we go and tell Ryan Fitzpatrick, you're not playing next week, this was a one-time thing, he's on board with that. I think Brian Flores has shown us that he's in tune with his locker room, he's in tune with his team, and that he's going to manage his team in an authentic way, as opposed to worrying about, oh, what will the perception be if I do this? He's really created something there that everybody seems to believe in.
So there was culture as a means of team building. There was also culture in the definition, meaning like a bunch of like fungus growing, which gets me to the NFC East. Because the Cowboys, Dan, and the Washington football team, they both won Sunday. They're now 3-7, both. The Giants, also 3-7, had a bye week this week, but they won two straight previously to tie them. So the Eagles suddenly are sitting mightily atop the division at 3-6-1 after losing to the Browns today. So this is famously the grossest division in football. But after this weekend, who do you have faith in going forward?
Nobody. I mean, faith. I think the only thing I have faith in is that, like, there's this horrible curse of the NFC East where no team has won it 2 years in a row since the Eagles did it in 03, 04. I mean, 16 years since somebody has repeated as division champ. And I now, based on the way the Eagles are performing, believe that there are supernatural forces at work, because there's no good reason the Eagles haven't run away with this division. I mean, Carson Wentz, something has happened to Carson Wentz akin to, you know, Space Jam, where they all lost their ability to play, where they all lost their talent. So the Eagles should be the best team. They're getting healthier. They have the established quarterback, just not playing well. And I don't really have much of an explanation for it, which is why I've decided to surrender to the supernatural ones.
All right, Dan, after the break, we will leave the world of the paranormal and talk about what you saw today with your own two eyes, covering the Colts and Packers in Indianapolis.
When you're on a business trip, you know what completely goes off the rails? Your workout routine, especially when you book a hotel that doesn't have a gym. So what ends up happening is you do a few push-ups and sit-ups in your room, run around the block, or just skip it entirely. Lame. If you just stay at La Quinta by Wyndham, you'll discover there's a fully equipped fitness center at every location. Now you can wake up and power your buys and tries the right way or de-stress with some cardio. The choice is yours. Tonight, La Quinta. Tomorrow, you shine. Book direct at LQ.com.
So, Dan, you're in Indianapolis right now. You just covered Packers-Colts. It was an amazing game. But before we get into it, what's it like to cover a game in person in this incredibly strange environment we now inhabit? Like, could you hear Phil Rivers yell "Dadgummit" from up in the press box? Or what's this like?
Look, it's weird. Actually, you know, this was the first game I've been to this year that had fans. So that was strange, because I've gotten used to the empty stadium and being able to kind of move around and park wherever I want. They had like 12,000 people here or something. So, look, we're not on the field pregame. That's a big part of the job, right? Milling around down there and talking to people. And now we have to do it from the stands. You know, these wonderful, glorious buffets that these stadiums put out for us are no longer. There's just box lunches. So that's, I guess we're all probably going to lose weight.
So let's set the scene here, because a newly slimmed down Dan Graziano and 12,000 locals are getting to watch a game that is billed as one of the best offenses in the league, Dan, in the Packers, versus one of the very best defenses in the Colts. And the Colts end up giving up 31 points, but their defense does end up making this big play when it matters in overtime, forcing this fumble by Marquez Valdez-Scantling.
Scantling goes in motion to the right, now back to the left, and a pass out to MVS. Has a blocker on the receiver screen, lost the ball! It's out at the 30, and the Colts have it!
So, what did Indianapolis prove to you today?
Well, I think resilience is the thing with them, right? They gave up 31 points, but it was 28 in the first half. So they come out in the second half and totally clamped down. You know, 28 points and a half, yeah, that doesn't look like a game that says, hey, we're the best defense in the league. But then they, at halftime, they got together and said, hey, we're the best defense in the league. Let's shut this down. And they didn't give up any points until Rodgers scored, or Mason Crosby scored that field goal right at the end to send it to overtime. So I was around the Colts 2 years ago when they went to the playoffs. They had that hot finish, and just seeing, you know, what the way Frank Reich runs the team and what the players say about him, it's one of these things. When teams are going to be hiring new head coaches in a couple of months, what are you going to be looking for? You're going to hear, oh, offensive, defense, whatever. This guy Reich was their second choice, remember, because Josh McDaniels turned him down after the Super Bowl and they had to get somebody and he was available.
Right.
He turns out to be exactly what they need. He's got this leadership thing. He's got this ability to kind of get them all together and keep them on the same page and pointed at the same goal. And we're seeing it again this year, I think.
And so this win in particular, I mean, is this the win that the Colts point to and say, you know what, beating the Packers in the way that we did, this is the proof that we need to say, yeah, we're in that top upper echelon?
Well, maybe if they win next week too, because they have Tennessee again next week. So they beat Tennessee a couple Thursdays ago. And if they beat them again, then they have a one-game lead and they have the tiebreaker. So then I think they can puff their chests out a little bit. Not that they necessarily would, but then I think that's where you look and say, okay, the Colts are in the driver's seat in a division that isn't the easiest. They can start to look at, well, how would we match up against Pittsburgh, against Kansas City, that kind of thing. So, you know, they're a one-week-at-a-time bunch. I was talking to Philip Rivers last week for pregame work, and he said the message from Reich is we're not going to let results dictate our emotions. Our own reactions are going to come off of our own process. So if the game doesn't go their way, but they prepared the way they wanted to, they consider that a good week, and they move on and try and make the next game go their way.
So before we pivot on to what the Titans did today, I do want to spare a thought for Aaron Rodgers, because I imagine, Dan, as you watch Aaron Rodgers do the Aaron Rodgers thing, he is marching down the field, he's making these impossible passes look incredibly easy. As he is doing that, it feels like tonight may have been this sort of MVP moment for him. But of course, they lose the game. Legally speaking, I believe we cannot count any loss towards an MVP campaign. What were you thinking watching Rodgers almost lead this comeback?
When I watch Aaron Rodgers in person, I think about how lucky I am to have this job. Like, when I was in high school, I'm old. When I was in high school in the late 80s, we used to watch Michael Jordan, and we were obsessed with Michael Jordan. And I had a friend named Rob Baril who would say he had a running, like, we'd get in there in the morning after a particularly good Jordan game the night before. And he'd say, do you know how lucky we are to be watching this, and, you know, live, like as it's happening? And I feel that way sometimes. You know, I'm watching Aaron Rodgers and I'm thinking, I'm going to tell my grandkids stories about watching this guy play. He makes that throw to Valdez Scantling.
Yard line, snap to Rodgers, lets it fly down the middle of the field, looking for MVS, coming up with a catch inside the 50-yard line.
You can't do it any better than that. That's perfection.
That is a very nice thought that I think we can very easily turn into a First Take headline. Dan Graziano says Aaron Rodgers is Michael Jordan. So thank you for the content generation.
Happy to help.
So let's get to Tennessee, because they had the other overtime thriller in the NFL today as the Titans beat the Ravens in Baltimore for the second time in 2020.
Gets the carry running left. Henry to the 25. Henry to the 20. To the 15. To the 10. Touchdown, Titans! As the Titans will run out of Baltimore with a shocker in OT.
Even though the outcome was the same as that playoff meeting they had in January, these are very different teams in very different places.
Yeah, because the Ravens aren't, you don't feel about them the way you did in the playoffs last year when Tennessee kind of shocked everybody by just sort of manhandling them from the get-go. And also, Baltimore was winning that game. So it was a comeback from Tennessee, which we don't think of as a comeback kind of team. They were on the ropes. I think this would have been, had they lost it, their fourth loss in five games, you know, for a team that has, you know, Super Bowl aspirations. Mm. So that shows you something about Tennessee. But, you know, I also feel like I don't know if it's going to happen for Baltimore. Like, we're expecting this incredible comeback. We're expecting Lamar to look like he did last year. And I don't know that it's going to bounce back for them. I think, you know, we forget because of how great he was. And this is true of any young player who has a monster year like he did. You know, he's a young player. And last year, they put all kinds of stuff in the offseason that really clicked, and they operated at this incredibly high level all year, and he won the MVP. And this year, stuff that they put in the offseason to continue to evolve him, for whatever reason, didn't click. Now they're in third place. They're behind Cleveland. So I'm looking at Baltimore thinking, you know, certainly they can make the playoffs, but I don't think they go in there as one of the teams to beat, even if they do.
The other enormous question surrounding a quarterback on Sunday involved Taysom Hill, Dan.
Yes.
And We have been waiting as a nation. I feel like we've been waiting for this guy to play quarterback, actually play the position of quarterback for a really long time now. We've been waiting to figure out, hey, Sean Payton, he invests $16 million guaranteed into Taysom Hill. Is that crazy or crazy like a fox?
I'm a believer in Sean Payton. I think that's where I am on it. I mean, I'm in Indy, right? So you think about the combine and he's running around the combine. It's 9 months ago, whatever it was, telling people, yeah, we could go with Taysom Hill. Drew Brees retires. We're prepared to go with Taysom Hill. Everybody you talked to said Payton believes that he can build an offense for Taysom Hill and around Taysom Hill, that he can do it. And everybody's skeptical, but the Saints were able to control the game and let Taysom Hill do what Taysom Hill does.
Taysom Hill in the gun. Now he motions Montgomery up to the line of scrimmage, and Taysom's going to keep it. Porter off the sideline, touchdown! Taysom Hill.
They won the game, and that's what matters. If they can continue to win games while Brees is out, then they're set up. And if Taysom Hill's the way to do it, and Sean Payton believes that, tonight's a night that Sean Payton can kick back and say, I told you guys so, and he's talking to pretty much everybody.
Yeah, yeah. So let me get you on another dangerous prediction before I let you go here. Will we see the enigma known as Jameis Winston before the season is through?
Man, I'm going to predict that he'll play. I don't know what the circumstances will be. But, like, I was thinking today, like, they play the Falcons today, and then they play the Falcons again in Week 13. So I was like, wouldn't it be something if you're Sean Payton and you say, I'm going to run Taysom Hill out there today, and then 2 weeks from now I'm going to throw Jameis Winston at you with a totally different game plan, and you'll have no idea how to prepare for it. Now, that's just me imagining it, but I think it would be awesome. And if it did happen, maybe those are the circumstances where Winston gets in the game.
I love the idea that you have Sean Payton game planning specifically just to mess with the Falcons.
Well, you got to win the game, man. You got the Bucks right there behind you. You know, you can't take anybody for granted. So I'm sure I don't know how he thinks. He's light years ahead of me for sure in terms of football.
Dan Graziano, enjoy the rest of your time in Indy. And thank you for being a little bit crazy like a fox.
Thanks for having me.
Okay, coming up. One of ESPN's own remembers the founders of a famous meme that was actually for a good cause, the fight against ALS.
Passion, drive, and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights, and more. Whether you're into speed, power, or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home some huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
Here's another story I want you to know. If you ever watched a video of LeBron or Roger Goodell or Oprah or Jeff Bezos or Justin Bieber or Dikembe Mutombo getting a bucket of ice water poured over their head on the internet, you have Patrick Quinn to thank.
I am ready for the ice now.
Quinn, a former Iona College rugby player, and his friend Pete Frates, a former Boston College baseball player, started the Ice Bucket Challenge in 2014, raising over $250 million to help fund a cure for ALS, otherwise known as Lou Gehrig's disease. Quinn died yesterday at age 37 after a seven-year battle with ALS, almost a year after Frates died of the neurodegenerative disease last December at age 34. ESPN play-by-play announcer Boog Sciambi was friends with both Quinn and Frates through his own charitable work in the fight against ALS. So I called Boog to better understand Quinn's legacy and the role that sports can play in fighting this disease.
Just think of somebody who wanted to make an impact once he was diagnosed with this disease, but he was a huge sports fan. He was a New York City kid. He loved the Yankees. He loved basketball. He's a huge North Carolina basketball fan, but it's hard for me to peel apart just how hard he fought, how much he wanted to advocate for spreading awareness for the disease.
And when you heard the news today, what was the first thing that went through your mind?
We lost another. I think that's the thing that went through my head. Pat was diagnosed in 2013, Pete in 2012, and they found each other over the internet and connected and helped fuel the Ice Bucket Challenge and the success, and they're both gone. People today have a little more of an understanding of just how dreadful and deadly a disease it is. The impact's been huge from the two of them, and there's still a lot more work to be done.
I have attended charity events that you've put on, and I am in awe of the work that you do. That's how you got to know these guys. How did you get involved with this as something that you care this deeply about?
Every event that you've been to of mine, Pat's been there. And the way I got involved is I grew up in New York City. I moved to Roosevelt Island, this funky little community. And I met this kid when I was 7 years old named Tim Sheehy. He's a really good soccer player, and we grew up together. And in 2005, Tim was diagnosed with ALS, and we lost him in 2007. In the middle of 2006, we decided we wanted to make a charity. And I think that one of the things that's hard, the work that I do with our group at Project Main Street, is to help the living, because as unbelievable as it may sound, there's so many things that are not covered by healthcare. Mm. You need a motorized wheelchair. Now you need your house to be more wheelchair accessible. You need a lift to get you from upstairs to downstairs. Can't forget about the people that are living with it that need so much help.
So the Ice Bucket Challenge, just to return to that for a second, it is staggering how effective it was and how compelling it was and how so many athletes and people in sports all took part in it as this internet video phenomenon. Do you have any idea if Pat had a sense that this would happen in this way, that it would be so successful?
Both of them were unbelievably determined. They were connectors. Both these guys were connectors. Pat's a connector, somebody that just put the pressure on his friends, get the word out there, start doing this, challenge one person and another person and another person. And yeah, that's the way this thing got going. I don't think they could have envisioned all of the high profile people it impacted, but man, they were determined.
So Boog, where does the movement they created, where does it go from here now that both of them have passed away?
Oh, it's a good question. I mean, look, you know, Steve Gleason, you know, they do dream trips. And one of the things that Steve has done, so as they have drugs that prolong life, it also means that cost continues, and even encourages people that are diagnosed with the disease to bank their voice, because that's one of the things that happen. You lose your voice through this incredible technology. With an eye gaze machine, you can still speak through a computer. You use your eyes to type. I mean, you could sit there, you can have a conversation with Steve where he talks through his computer, and he advocates for that. I mean, among other things, through technology, Team Gleason has impacted a ton of lives. But going forward, I wish I had a good answer for you, pal. I wish I could sit here and say that we're close to a cure, but I know that one of the things that we're able to do with our small little charity is for these people that are being affected and fighting this thing, hang in there. And that's something that Pat embodied. Yeah, he's just, he's a special guy. He'll be missed.
Boog, thank you so much, man, for lending your voice to an incredibly important and incredibly difficult cause.
Thanks, Pablo.
I'm Pablo Torre. This has been ESPN Daily. I'll talk to you tomorrow.